Session number 8655, Reel 4.
Mr. Weiberg, Reel 4. I think you were saying that the Brigadier thought that he knew when the Italians were going to withdraw and had issued some orders accordingly.
That's right. The result of that was that the whole of B Company were ordered out in a hurry, and the idea was that we should go out and get behind the enemy forward positions, which were in the Galabat area, and catch the men from those positions as they withdrew in the direction of Metemma, where the main force was or had been. So we had to get organised very quickly, and we went out, and my platoon was leading. And I was behind the leading section because I was the one who'd done most of the patrolling in the area, and therefore I was the one that knew the way, was supposed to know the way better than the others. And we went out by the usual route to Jebel Umzariba and then followed this Khor El Gir, this dry river bed, which eventually had a junction with Boundary Khor. Boundary Khor was in fact marked the frontier between the Sudan and Abyssinia, and it went behind Galabat and in front of Metemma. So we eventually got to this junction of the Khors, which I was using as a landmark. And there we turned right and followed the Sudan bank of Boundary Khor. And, of course, we were making a lot of noise. There was a troop of monkeys in the trees, which we frightened off in the direction of the enemy positions, if they were still there. And this had all taken quite a long time, and quite soon it got dark. And there was no moon at that point. And soon after it got dark, we were suddenly fired on from the direction of Metemma. That was from the other side of the Khor, from our left. And quite heavy fire, machine guns, mortars, but fortunately it was inaccurate. I could see the tracer streaming away over our heads. Well, there was nothing much we could do because it was pitch dark. The position was entirely unreconnoitred. There was no possibility of attacking anything because we couldn't see and we'd never been there before. And so we had to, after a preliminary sort of... we stayed there for a short while, and then the company commander, Tony Timbrell, said, well, we'd better go back. So we withdrew about 200 yards and arranged ourselves in a sort of defensive position. Then he and I had a conference, and it was decided that I should take one section and go back to Jebel Umzariba and use the telephone to report what had happened to battalion headquarters. So I went back to Jebel Umzariba, which of course took quite some time, and I got Billy Armour, who was the adjutant, out of bed, and he went to see the CO, and the CO said, well, there's nothing you can do, you better come back. So I then went back to the battalion, went back to the company, rather. In the meantime, Tony Timmerl had patrols probing forward again, and they had established that the enemy was still there. So apparently, anyway, the brigadier had made a mistake. They weren't retiring that night. And so we just then, as soon as the company commander got the order to withdraw, well, that is in fact what we did, and we just retraced our steps. And we were fired on by mortars as we withdrew, but they were inaccurate, fortunately. And then, of course, it had got light by this time, and an enemy aeroplane came over. It didn't drop any bombs, so I suppose it was just reconnaissance to have a look and see what was going on. And again, there were no casualties. Nobody got hurt, so...
Presumably, when the enemy were shooting at you, they were firing blind.
Yes, they were firing at noise. They'd heard us coming. And they probably held their fire to an extent, and then as soon as they thought we were getting too close, they opened fire.
How wide was Boundary Khor?
I should think about... it wasn't very wide, 10 yards. But quite deep. It had a quite steep size. Not high, but quite steep. And, of course, it was... As a matter of fact, when I took that one section to go back to Umzariba to use the telephone, I didn't make any bones about it. I thought, well, I've got to get along as quickly as possible. So I walked along the bed of the Khor, which was... Of course, it was dark, but in daylight would have been a wrong thing to do because you would have been so vulnerable.
You'd have been predictable in your movement.
Yes, but I thought in the circumstance, we'd just come that way, and so I thought I could go back that way along the bed of the Khor, which meant, of course, we got along very much more quickly.
Have you any idea why the brigadier thought that the Italians would be withdrawing on that particular...
No, we never discovered what the source of his information was. No idea.
Now, you said that you'd done most of the patrolling in that area and were reckoned to know the way. Had you actually prepared sketch maps or any other sort of aid memoir of the geography of the area and the routes through it?
I don't think I'd prepared any sketch maps. No, we had primitive maps. We didn't have what you might call the equivalent of ordnance survey maps of that area. We had rather primitive maps, printed on material rather than paper, and I was familiar with the features that were marked on the map and knew more or less where they were on the ground.
So it was really in your head, was it, the knowledge?
Yes. I was the natural choice to lead because I was the only officer in the other officer in the company at that time, besides the company commander.
Did you do any firing back towards the...
Oh, yes.
The enemy?
Yes, my platoon was in front, and I told them to... we fired back. We were firing blind, too, you see, because we couldn't see where the firing was coming from. All I could see was this tracer going way over our heads. I could see more or less the direction it was coming from, so I told them to fire back, yes, into the darkness.
When you were ordered out, did you actually have a formal conference to make a plan for this operation?
Before we left the battalion area? Oh, yes. The company commander and myself and the company sergeant major, we all got together and said, well, you know, what are we going to do? See, and there were certain arrangements to be made as to what we were going to take with us and what sort of order we would go in. Quite brief, because we were told to get on with it, because it was already, we didn't leave until the afternoon.
How long were you given to make your plans and get up and go?
We were just told to go as quickly as possible, and I think we probably didn't take very long. I think the company commander would have got back from battalion headquarters, that would have only taken him a few minutes, and said, right, this is what we're going to get. Sent for me, sent for the company sergeant major, and said, no, look, what we've got to do is this. And then he would have got the other two platoon commanders and told them what to do, and we would have left probably in quite a short space of time, enough time to get the men to get their equipment on and form up and see that they have a quick inspection by their platoon commanders, see they've got all their equipment, that sort of thing.
When you were making your plan, did you actually decide on where you're going to set up your ambush positions, or were you going to do that when you actually got there and were on the ground?
Yes, we were going into territory that had been completely unreconnoitred, and so we couldn't really make any plan as to what we were going to do when we got there. The plan was simply was to get behind Galabat, and so, in the hope that as the forward posts, these posts that have been dominating no man's land, as they withdrew in the direction of Batema to sort of bring up, presumably bring up the rear party of the withdrawal, that we would be able to shoot them as they came back.
So
we would take them by surprise.
You were to infiltrate and then ambush them on opportunity.
Yes, that's right.
What happened then after you got back, after this abortive?
Well, we just returned to the company area and that was that.
And what happened eventually then when the when that, that front broke up?
Well, then you see, eventually the patrols that probed forward found that the enemy had gone. In the meantime, a mobile column had been briefed and it, to be ready to chase the enemy down the road. And that consisted of my company, B Company, the Bren gun carrier platoon, the Bren gun carrier platoon of the 3rd 12th RFFR, our intelligence officer, our medical officer, an OP party from the Surrey and Sussex Yeomanry, and I think they brought up a troop of guns as well later. And all this was commanded by Hugh Stewart, who was a major commanding headquarter company. So it was in the morning that it was found that the enemy had left, but of course they'd mined the road. And it took the rest of that day to remove the mines from the road that led from the Italian forward positions back through Metemma. So the mobile column wasn't in fact able to leave until the following morning, first light the following day. So there was no question of close pursuit. Obviously the enemy had had plenty of time to get well away.
Had they been detected during their withdrawal or their mine laying activities? Was anyone aware of what they were doing?
I don't know how it was found out that the mines were there. I don't know. They weren't detected. The actual enemy soldiers were not detected in their withdrawal. No, they were just discovered to be gone. Because I think it was one of the Indian battalions just sent a platoon forward and expected to be fired at, and they weren't fired at, and they got into Gallabat Fort, and there was nobody there. And
who actually did the raising and clearing of the mines then?
Yes, well, the other section which I forgot to mention just now, that was with us, and of course the most important section really, was the a section of Indian engineers, a section of Indian sappers and miners, under the command of 2nd Lieutenant Premindra Singh Bhagwat. And he had a Bren gun carrier, and he led the column standing up in front of this carrier. And it was a dirt road, so that if they buried mines in the road, of course that meant they had to disturb the surface of the road, which could be seen. So he watched the road in front of him, and if he saw a disturbance in the road he thought might conceal a buried mine, then he had to investigate it. And then, of course, we crossed a lot of riverbeds. Some of them had water in, but quite some of them didn't. Now, if it was a dry riverbed, of course, the bed of the riverbed was stony, loose stone. So it was possible to bury mines there without leaving any evidence of having done so. So, of course, he had to investigate all these dry riverbeds very thoroughly before the column was allowed to cross, because the countryside on either side was too close for the vehicles to get off to go round. They had to go follow the road.
By close, do you mean close with vegetation?
Yes, mm-hmm. Close country. I mean vegetation, trees. It was remarkable, really. As soon as we crossed the frontier into Abyssinia, everything got more lush. There was water about, there were bigger trees altogether than there were on the Sudan side. And Bhagwat did this personally, and over a period of 4 days, and he was injured. I mean, he had his eardrums injured, and he had several casualties in his section, and in fact he got a Victoria Cross for that exploit. In fact, he was the first Indian to get a Victoria Cross in World War II. So anyway, the mines meant that the progress was very slow. However, we did catch up with one or two Eritrean troops. I think what happened was that we must have passed them. They must have heard us coming and hid in the vegetation on the sides of the road, and we passed them, and then they tried to get through our lines at night, and they were discovered and shot, and one or two were killed. And one of the other platoons in B Company was commanded by another officer who'd recently arrived called Bill Williams, and he shot some of them one night, and then when I brought my platoon up the next morning, I found some of them. They were in the long grass. They were sort of crouched in the long grass. They weren't really trying to hide because they didn't... I think they'd given up by that time, so they were taken prisoner. And then after about 4 days... Oh, in the meantime, we occupied camps that had been occupied by the enemy, and one I remember was quite disgusting because I think there had been Eritrean troops there, and there were lumps of raw meat and dead mules and refuse of all kinds everywhere, and flies, you wouldn't believe the flies. Although we would, as far as flies were concerned, we would... meat, even worse conditions as far as that was concerned, in the Alamein line in Egypt in 1942. But I was amazed at all these flies. And then, they sent planes over and bombed us. This was what they were able to do. This was the one thing they were able to do without fear of any opposition. But they missed, as usual, fortunately. And eventually we arrived at the foothills. This is the road to Gondar, and Gondar is about 7,000 feet up, and so eventually we arrived at the foothills. And there they had laid an ambush, and we ran into this ambush, and by this time my platoon was leading the column, except, of course, the Bren gun. One of the Bren gun carrier platoons was always in front, so the leading infantry platoon was immediately behind the carriers. We ran into this ambush, considered the machine guns and mortars. It was either mortars or it was small caliber artillery, probably pack animal artillery. And as soon as the firing started, we got off out of the vehicles and spread out onto the sides of the road. And at one point I was standing beside my vehicle, and one of my corporals was standing on the other side, and a shell burst in front, and we both immediately, instinctively ran round to the back and met head on. And I think I said afterwards that was probably the only occasion in the war that my steel helmet actually saved me from injury. And then the firing died down, and the column commander gave the order to withdraw. So as the firing had died down, I told my platoon to get back into the vehicles, and we turned them round and went back down the road, and quite soon a shell burst, and I felt something hit my stomach. I thought it didn't hurt or anything. I just felt a slight sting. I thought it was probably a stone or something kicked up by the blast, but when I eventually happened to look down, I discovered there was blood all over the place. So I got out of the vehicle, and John Newman, the intelligence officer, was standing there at the time, so I said, asked him to put my field dressing on, and I had this small round hole in my abdomen, which I didn't feel very happy about, because I assumed that the missile, whatever it was inside doing goodness knows what. So there was then some delay whilst the medical truck, which had broken down, the stores were salvaged from that into other vehicles, and eventually I got back to a sort of rear column headquarters, where the MO was, fortunately. And he had a look at me and he said, "Oh, you're going to be all right. It's the shell splinter, if that's what it is, has not penetrated the abdominal wall. It's lodged in the muscles, so you're going to be all right." So that was quite a relief, and I was then evacuated.
How were you evacuated? Was it by motor ambulance?
No, we didn't have an ambulance. Bagger, the sapper, he was going back for some reason or other, and he took me part of the way in his truck. And then we met up, further back down the road, we met up with a section of the Surrey and Sussex Yeomanry, and they were sending a truck back, and I was put into that. And that was an uncomfortable journey, because this truck was a Humber, and it was built low. I don't know why they built them like that, because they were intended for use in various parts of Africa and Asia, where you get these rows with deep ruts, and of course it built low, the sump kept dragging on the ridge in the middle of the road, to the extent that sometimes I thought we were going to sort of come to a halt altogether. And then anyway, we managed to get through, and at one point it got dark, and then we had the headlights on, and they picked out some I wondered what it was at first. In fact, I pulled my revolver out. I didn't know what was going on, but it turned out to be some Sudan Defence Force on camels waiting on the side of the road for us to pass. And then eventually we got back to the ADS, the Advanced Dressing Station at Galabat. And I got out of the truck. I thought I could still walk, but I couldn't by that time. I suppose the muscles had sort of seized up, and I fell in a heap on the ground, and they brought a stretcher and took me into the ADS, and I spent the night there. And then the next day I was put in this. By this time there was an ambulance available, and I was put into that. But now we were back on this corrugated road with the ruts going across the road, and this ambulance was driven by an Indian. And he belted down this road at top speed, and the ambulance was juddering like some sort of sifting machinery gone mad. And to make the journey at all bearable with this wound in my stomach, I had to... I was on the lower bunk, and I lifted myself off it by grasping the framework of the bunk above me. And so that's how we got to the main dressing station. Well, that wasn't any use, because the only MO there was himself ill with dysentery, and was so ill he couldn't do anything, and except he went to hospital himself eventually. So I got back in. I was put back into the ambulance, and we went off again, and eventually arrived at Gedareth, which was where the casualty clearing station was. And that's there. There were proper wards in one of the few brick buildings in the town. And by this time, there were quite a lot of casualties from both sides coming through from the Kassala front, because in the meantime, the rest of the division was advancing into Eritrea from Kassala through places like Barentu and Agordat. And so the surgeon was quite busy, and I had to sort of wait around for about 3 days, I think. And I was on a thing called M&B, which was penicillin and antibiotics were not yet available, and this M&B was a sort of pre-penicillin drug that was given to combat infection. But the trouble was, it made you feel extremely depressed, and I lay in this place feeling very depressed indeed, but due entirely to this drug. Anyway, eventually, one morning, the surgeon came in. He said, "All right, well, go do you now." And I was taken into a marquee, which was the operating theatre, and placed on the operating table. And I said, "You know, I've actually just eaten breakfast, and if the anaesthetic makes me sick, which they used to do in those days sometimes, with this wound in my abdomen, it's going to be very painful." He said, "Yes, I quite agree." And he had a look at it, and he said, "Well, it's not a very big wound. I think we'll do it with a local anaesthetic." So he injected all round the wound with this hypodermic syringe, but the anaesthetic didn't work. He said, "Oh, it's too old." So I had to have chloroform after all, and by this time, of course, the surgeon was getting very impatient, and he said to me, "Count," and I said, I counted up to three and was struggling to say four, and I didn't, and he started cutting, and he did actually start cutting a split second before I was really under. However, I came to, and I wasn't sick, and so that was all right.
Do you know how long the actual operation took?
He had to make an incision to look for a foreign body, and which he didn't discover, because I saw the report afterwards. It said no foreign body found. whatever happened to it, goodness knows. The MO, original idea, was that it must have been hit the buckle of my belt first. And so having made the incision into the abdominal wall at the site of the wound and found nothing, he would just stitch me up again. I shouldn't think it took him more than 10 minutes. I don't really know, I'm guessing.
How long did it take you to recover from your wound and the operation?
Well, I then was put on a train and sent back to Khartoum, where, of course, there was a proper hospital. And I think by the time I got to the hospital, I was walking again. And I was in the hospital only a short time. And I was due to go on a signal course at a place called Mardi outside Cairo. And I was due there on a certain date. I wanted to go on this signal course because that sort of thing interested me. And I was very pleased to recover. I had the stitches. I told them I want to be out of here and on the, getting on the trip to Cairo as soon as possible. And they took the stitches out sooner than they should so that I could do this. So that, in fact, afterwards, the wound did part slightly and I got a very slight infection. But it didn't amount to anything. And I did actually, in fact, get to the signal course on time. So, and it wasn't very serious. And I recovered quite easily.
I'd like to ask you a few things about the pursuit operation. Yeah. From Gallabat. You say that the pursuit column consisted firstly of the Rhone carriers and then of your infantry, presumably in vehicles.
Yes.
And then there were the sappers who were presumably there for obstructions and mine clearance.
Well, mine clearance, really.
What sort of intervals were maintained between the vehicles on this column?
Well, I should think a couple of vehicle lengths in between each vehicle, something like that, I should think. It was just possible, in the event of the enemy planes coming over to bomb, it was just possible to get the vehicles off the road in an emergency. Although you couldn't drive off the road, you could get them off the road into cover. In the event of bomber planes coming over.
And what were you supposed to do if there were an ambush or if you ran up against an enemy position? Was there a prearranged plan or procedure worked out for dealing with...
I think this was a harassing operation. I don't think it was a serious operation at all. The main thrust was obvious. It had already been decided, obviously, by then that the main thrust was going to be via Kassala, up through into Kerin, and then on to Asmara, the capital of Eritrea. And so I don't think we were meant to do anything very positive. I think it was just harassing and harrying the enemy, and perhaps hoping to catch prisoners. Well, we did capture some prisoners, but they were only Eritrean troops. They wouldn't have known very much. Perhaps the general hoped that we might catch some white Italian prisoners and get some information from them. After the action at the ambush, which it was actually at a place called Wani, of course I was evacuated, but as far as...